Hello, this is Caitlin Plant, Program Coordinator for Distress and Crisis Ontario. And for this week's podcast, I'm joined by Elma and Layla. And the three of us are going to have a conversation together about our different experiences with caregiving, each from a unique perspective. So Layla, if you would like to start, I would love it if you could give us a brief explanation of the caregiving you have experience with.
Yeah, thanks, Caitlin. My name is Layla, and I'm a mom of three boys, and my oldest son is on the autism spectrum, and so I'll be speaking to caregiving in that context in terms of raising a child who's on the autism spectrum.
Elma?
I will be speaking from the perspective of a daughter that took care of a mother with advanced dementia. I had one sibling who did not live in the country. And I was the child that stepped in and took care of my mom. And I believe she lived with us for 2.5, almost 3 years before we needed to put her into long-term care due to the advanced progression of her Alzheimer's.
And I, Caitlin, will be speaking from the perspective of working as a paid caregiver for an employer outside of the home and outside of my family. So my first question is going to be kind of a conversation for the three of us to have to explain the similarities and the differences between those three different roles. Because as much as those are all caregiving, Layla, your experience as a mom will look very different from Elma's experience as a daughter caring for a mom. And mine, again, will be completely different because I was being paid for it and it wasn't someone that I'm related to at all. So Elma, can you think of anything specific that really differentiates you caring for a parent as an adult from different forms of caregiving?
Well, I just think it's the role reversal, particularly when mom's dementia was early stages, when she'd have her more cognizant times, you know, she was mom. And then as the day would progress, mom was a sundowner, more and more it would transition to me taking that role over. There were days when I would flip between the caregiver to the daughter to an absolute stranger in her world that she had no concept of who I was. So even though I always knew who I was in her life, she often did not know who I was in her life. And that made the caregiving sometimes very complex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can imagine that would cause some difficulties.
There were difficulties. Yes, there were definitely, and I didn't foresee them. I assumed that the mother-daughter relationship would be, the bond would be strong enough that we'd sail just through on nice smooth seas. And it was so much more challenging than I ever anticipated.
Layla, as a mom, I know that being a mother to any child is a form of caregiving. Obviously, when a child has some exceptional abilities in there, it can become a little bit more complicated. So can you give us a little bit of details into how that adds some complication?
Yeah, I'd say that it added a layer of stress to some of the things that you want your child to be able to do. And in terms of my oldest son's development, you know, one of the challenges for him was social interaction. And so we wanted to give him opportunities for social interaction. However, that could be incredibly stressful in terms of how he would sometimes navigate those experiences. And like when I think about him being at the age of playing on playgrounds, and he was a big kid, like my husband is over 6 feet and I'm almost 6 feet. And so our son is a big kid, and his spatial awareness was just not very attuned. And so I would really worry about him kind of bulldozing younger kids and safety issues around that. So there was just a layer of stress kind of overlaying a lot of things. And the other piece I would note is that in terms of his development, it was really hard for us to anticipate what that would look like even a few years down the road, and hard for us to know how independent he may or may not become. And so it was kind of hard to gauge whether the caregiving role that we were experiencing when he was younger was something that we should anticipate carrying forward into the, you know, foreseeable future. Would he need our care in those kinds of ways as he got older, and would he become independent as an adult? Just lots of question marks around that, which adds a layer of ambiguity that's, yeah, a particular aspect to the experience of raising a child on the spectrum in particular.
Yeah, that's a very interesting thing to pinpoint, because especially from the perspective that we're all bringing, Alma's mom, the expectation there would have been that she would be getting worse as her Alzheimer's progressed. And the perspective that I bring, I cared for a adult woman who mentally was sound. However, she was wheelchair bound due to MS, having paralyzed her from the neck down. And her care stayed pretty much the same for the 4 years that I was there. So I always knew every day exactly what I was getting into and exactly what the plan would be for that day, because routine was a very big thing in her world. So I always knew that Mondays was a cleaning day and Wednesdays was a grocery day and that type of thing. And yeah, I think the unique perspective as being a paid caregiver is that you don't have that familial relationship in place beforehand. So it took quite a long time for us to get to a point where we felt comfortable, especially with the personal care type caregiving that I was giving. And eventually we got to a point where we did feel like family, because I, for a long time, was her sole caregiver full time. And you build a relationship doing things like that, for sure. But yeah, it took a while to get there. So my next question would be, if any of us has one clear moment, both of struggle and accomplishment, that we're feeling comfortable with sharing, because obviously caregiving is a very complex role. And there are a lot of times when it can be very, very hard to get through a day if you're having a challenging day. And I know that there are struggles that stand out, but there are also things that can make you feel very proud to be a caregiver. And I'm wondering if either one of you is willing to share something that stands out from your experiences. Alma, maybe if you want to start with a positive one.
There were moments most days where I would get a glimmer of recognition from my mom, or for her, particularly when she became nonverbal, it was physical touch. And growing up, my mom was not at all, that's not a love expression that she would use, this physical touch, but it would just be the hand on the cheek. It would be the hand on the cheek and a pat. And her first language was Frisian, which is a dialect within the Netherlands. So her second language was Dutch. So as she lost her English, the terms of endearment would come actually easier for her. So even though she wouldn't know who I was, she would know I was one of hers. And, you know, I would get the caress on the cheek and a term of endearment, or a smile or a laugh, but those became farther and farther between. But it was every now and then, just the fact that I knew that she saw me and that she knew that I was there for her. Mm-hmm. That meant a lot. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a moment of struggle that you remember?
Well, there were a few of them. There's 2 days that really stand out. When mom was still verbal, still conversational, there was one day she had no idea who I was. We had spent the entire day. I didn't know enough yet at that stage to not try to correct her or join her in where she was at. I still thought I always had to reorientate her to the right place and the right time. So if she would get something wrong, I would correct her, because I thought that's what I should do. And she didn't remember who I was. And she kept saying to me, she would use my husband's name, and she would say, "He used to be married to such a nice woman. What happened to her?" And I'm like, "Mom, that was me. I've been married to him. I'm the only person." No. She was such a nice woman. And then I would pull out the photo albums and I would show her, and look at, you were even there. And she was just so angry at me because she was convinced I was lying. And then my husband would come home. She'd right away recognize him, know who he was. I was chopped liver. And she would right away ask him, you know, "What happened to that really nice woman you were married to?" And he just thought it was hilarious. And I just wanted to punch everybody. And then I remember when she became incontinent, the toileting was a real issue. And my mother had very bad arthritis and she was always in pain. So she just liked to stay curled up in her bed, regardless of how soiled she would be. And I had to deal with a particularly bad morning. Everything was unfortunate. And she got very angry at me and she took the contents of her diaper and tried to throw it at me. And I remember I took her over my knee and I spanked her. Because in such a moment, I was like, just a swat on her butt. She still had the blankets and the diapers and everything, but I was just mortified that that was my response to that. There was no grace. There was no laughter. I was just, "How dare you?" And gave her a swat on the butt. And that was a real low moment. I tapped myself out on that one and said, "Somebody else to come in and somebody needs to do this, because mm-hmm. I knew I'd gotten too far that day. Mm-hmm.
That really hits home the rule of reversal that you brought up earlier, that as a daughter, having to bend your mother over your knee would be very jarring experience for sure. Layla, how about you?
Do you want me to start with an accomplishment or a story?
Whichever you feel like beginning with. Yeah.
I was thinking about that one, the struggle in particular. Maybe I'll start there and then end on the accomplishment. There's not a particular memory that comes to mind, but when I think back, I think one of the things that's hard for me to admit was my own discomfort and concern about my son not fitting in and how some of what was going on for me was this worry about what other people would think. Would they think I wasn't doing a good job as a parent? It if people were uncomfortable with his behavior, that would make me uncomfortable. Okay. As opposed to maybe what I wish I could have done would be to kind of step in and maybe do some education or that kind of thing. But then I would get, when I was uncomfortable, there would be some fear there for me that would kind of motivate then in terms of wanting to correct my son or, you know, coach him to do something that would be more appropriate. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's a hard piece to admit, but that was part of my experience. And then in terms of an accomplishment, one that came to mind is an example of kind of the opposite of, instead of getting oriented around that fear, being really able to tune in to what he needed in a moment. So I think of one of his birthday parties when he was maybe, I don't know, in grade school for sure, maybe like grade three. And he had helped make the list. So it was of who to invite. It was a bunch of kids from his class. And he had helped decide on all the games that we would do. And his birthday's in March. So it was all indoors in our house. And it's a confined space. Mm-hmm. We live in an old house with small rooms. And so there's lots of kids and it's loud. And my son had a lot of sensory issues. And mm-hmm. so when it was loud, that was really overwhelming for him. Okay. So at one point, the kids are all in the dining room and it's super loud. And my son picks up something really heavy. Like, I think it might have been a glass paperweight or something. And he threw it. Mm-hmm. And I saw it happen and I couldn't stop it from happening. And no one got hurt. But I was able in that moment to kind of like swoop in and bring him to the stairwell, so a bit separate, and to kind of corral him into a spot. I could see he was so agitated, and to say, "Hey, buddy," like, and I this is one of those moments where I'm like, "Oh, thank goodness, I found that place in myself that was that calm voice, right? That steadying voice." And I'm like, "This is hard right now, right? There's so many people here. It's so loud. Your body has a lot of energy in it. I can see that that's hard right now." And it's super dangerous to throw something heavy, get hurt. Someone else can get hurt. And then I remember saying, like, I know you want to stay and be at this party. And so let's see what we can do to help you be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And asking him, do you need like a squeeze? Do you need to rub your legs? You know, just kind of coaching him through that moment. And he was able to move through, to discharge some energy somehow and to rejoin the group. And at that time, we were also working with a woman, an adult on the spectrum, who was doing some coaching with us. And she, when I shared that example with her, that experience, she just really affirmed that and said, it seems like you were really on his team in that moment. Mm-hmm. And that's what he needed. And so that was really helpful for me as a parent to have a moment like that of being able to tune into his needs and meet him there and help him through that.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you kind of reached this shift in thought where instead of shutting down his actions, you like really became comfortable with redirecting the energy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really, I can understand that would feel like a huge accomplishment. Yeah. I think in my own experience, the one major day that stands out for me was with my employer. We needed to use a lift to do a lot of the personal care. And there was one day when I had my employer up in the air and the lift broke and nothing I could think of to do was working to get this lift moving again. And she's literally dangling in the air. And I had to run to the other room and grab the phone and grab the manual and try to figure out what to do to get her out of the air. And we had to call her husband to leave work to come home to help us so that we could just get her out of the lift to then get the lift serviced. And it was just one of those moments where we ended up, yep, standing there with me supporting her head and her just hanging out for a while until someone could come and help us. And it, looking back, it became one of those things that we laughed about, because what else can you do? But I remember in the moment for both of us, we kind of just looked at each other and went, oh no, like, how are we going to handle this? And I think, yeah, a sense of accomplishment comes from the fact that even though she wasn't my employer, now not working for her anymore, we still stay in touch regularly, and she does feel like family, and she became this amazing, incredible person in my life that I go to frequently for advice and talk to her about her family. And I know her kids and her granddaughters and all these things. And she's become this force to be reckoned with within my world, which I am really, really grateful for. And I never would have met her if I hadn't gotten a job with her. Yeah. So this question doesn't apply to me as much because I was the support system, but what support systems did the two of you have in place to support your caregiving roles? Layla, maybe I'll let you go first on this one.
Sure. Yeah, I got to that question and I was like, oh, right. But I was just thinking ahead for this conversation that it was a struggle for us. You know, overall, I'd say our experience was one where we felt pretty isolated. Partly that was due to, we had friends who lived in the area and that we kind of did life with around the time where we got our son's diagnosis, just because of circumstances, a number of our friends moved away. And it meant that we just didn't have people who would be those people that could kind of step in and support us as a family. And our parents on both sides live out of town, and that also wasn't really an option for us in terms of practical relief.
How old was your son when he got his diagnosis?
He would have been 3.5.
Oh.
And he's now 15, so that would have been, yeah.
So you would have had babies by then too, right? Because he was the oldest.
Not yet. We would have just been having our second, would have been a newborn around the time we were getting that diagnosis. Yeah. And my husband was having health struggles as well around that time. And so there were just a number of things going on. And I think too, a lot of people didn't feel really equipped to know how to care for our son. So it wasn't as easy as just hiring a babysitter or dropping him off with someone. It felt hard to do that because when we would go to visit places, it sometimes felt like we were a bit of a liability. Things would get damaged. And that was just partly the sensory stuff. And it was a bit of like a bull in a china shop. And so, yeah, so there were, it was hard to figure out where the supports were. We were able at one point, when it became clear that our son could not do, for example, on Sunday mornings, we would go to church and the children's programming could no longer, they didn't feel equipped for him to just join into the group programming. Okay. And so we were able to hire someone to do some respite then and to do like one-on-one support for him. Mm-hmm. And that felt really important for my husband and I to have like an hour a week where we could just sort of do something together, be in a service, participate in something together, and not worry about being called out or of the service to attend to something, could just sort of relax in that window of time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You mentioned already that you had a older woman with autism who you built a relationship with to kind of get some mentoring from her. At what point did you start doing that?
Our son probably would have been maybe more like 7, 8 around there. So, you know, we were starting to try and figure out, our son did some of the applied behavior analysis therapy. ABA therapy is like the mainstream therapy that's funded by the government. Mm-hmm. And he did that for for several years in an intense way. And we just started to have other questions about what kind of things might support him and to consider other things beyond just like his behavior and kind of shaping or coaxing certain behaviors out of him, trying to understand what kind of environmental factors are contributing. And so we just started to do some research around that and then came across this woman who, her expertise was really around having a more holistic view of what's going on and what's impacting people's functionality who are on the spectrum. And so she helped us to consider things that would not have been addressed previously in our understanding of how to support our son.
Okay. Alma, what kind of supports were you able to use with your mom?
Again, initially there was very little. At that point, we were living in Huron County, geographically, you know, a little bit isolated. We had combined households at that point. We had moved from where we lived, had bought a house that was good to accommodate mom. But then we were pretty much on our own. And had it not been for, she had one very good friend from her church, Betsy, who used to come every week to have coffee with her. And that let me go downstairs, get some laundry going, maybe do a walk in the backyard, do what I needed to do. I'd never leave because if mom could get aggressive, I didn't want Betsy in that position. But mom could have a friend to be a friend. They could have their coffee chabakjes, which is a Dutch the cookies. And I always got the fancy cups out and, you know, made always sure it was something special. And Betsy saved me. She was pretty remarkable. And then eventually we did, it was after that incident where I took my mom over my knee, CCAC finally came alongside with some respite care. And for us, again, it was Sunday mornings, how important it was to have that Sunday morning where we could go to church. My husband was a pastor, and there was roles I had at the church as a leader and stuff. And it was really important to be able to keep that routine. Plus, we also had three teenagers. You know, one, our oldest son had just gotten married. We had a grandchild on the way. There was different stages in life that I was also trying. I was very much the sandwich generation at that point. And there was very little. Of course, they referred us to the Alzheimer's Association, but all they could offer was some books, and the support group was for spouses. There was nobody else in my situation. So I found an online support group. But my mother was particularly difficult, and she had done some really hard work in her life to change her basic perspective. She was a child of World War II. She had very set ideas about what was right. She believed that females were lesser than men. I'd always been raised that way. And she challenged herself, and she grew, and she changed, and she became much more gentle and forgiving in her life. But Alzheimer's reset her back to where she used to be. And we ended up taking care of a woman who was very difficult and very angry and somewhat abusive, particularly verbally, towards myself, towards my daughter, because we were just the girls in the house. So we had a very lower status for her. So when care finally did come for her, thankfully she had lost her English. And they didn't know what she was saying to them, because it would have been appalling had they understood how particularly unkind she was. You know, so those challenges right there, you know, the seeing all that hard work she had done and to hold on to the fact that no, mom at her core really had changed. She really had made some real progress in her life, and Alzheimer's took that away from her. You know, but thankfully the support, when it did come in, they weren't aware of it. But once when she finally was no longer able to walk or sit up or feed herself, then we did have to put her into long-term care. Mm-hmm. But until then, I got a grand total of 4 hours a week and Betsy. So yeah, that was it.
Wow. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So again, my perspective on this one is a little bit different because I was the support going into the home. I think the one way that I can relate to this a little bit is that for a long stretch of time, I was the only support person that my employer had. There just was a series of events that made things a little bit complicated in their world. And it made me feel very responsible for being able to be there. I really felt like I couldn't get sick. I couldn't have anything that I needed to take time off for, which was a little bit stressful just because I knew that they didn't have anybody else and I didn't want it to become their problem. So that was a little bit of a unique perspective that I had in that sense, that it put that pressure on me to make sure that I was showing up every time they needed me, because I didn't want to yeah, have them lose the support. So I guess to start wrapping up the conversation, my second last question is, given everything that we've talked about today, what is one major thing that you would really like people to know about the role of caregiving, whether it's a positive, whether it's something that maybe you want them to know for the caregivers that they might have around them in their life to offer support to them? Layla, I'll let you go first on this one as well, in terms of something that, yeah, you think that that everyone should know about the caregivers in their lives.
I mean, I can remember times that during the season when caregiving was more intense, friends who were concerned and probably felt like it would be good for me to have a good cry or be angry about my situation in some way, like not angry at my son at all, but just, you know, express more emotion maybe about some of the things that were difficult. I think I was in kind of a survival mode at some points, and just knowing that, particularly when my husband was having issues as well, it was just like a lot on my shoulders. And I felt like I can't do that right now because I have to keep going and I need to just be able to manage. Like I can't slow down enough to feel some of these things right now, because I don't know what will be on the other side of that and if I'll be able to keep going in the way that I need to keep going right now. And so that would create some tension, right? Where friend might bring over a candle and want us to like sit and have a, you know, good cry where they could support me. And I was like, that's not going to happen right now.
Yeah, no. We can't open that door right now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And yeah. And so just, I don't know what I would say in terms of people who have folks in that kind of season around them that they're trying to support. But maybe to see if they can just be okay with what is, like the support person trying to support the caregiver, right? Yeah. The caregiver's doing what they need to do, to make it work as best they can. And, yeah, sometimes even that, though it's well-intentioned, it can feel like another piece of expectation or pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe kind of letting go of what you think you should be doing for them and asking directly what you can do for them.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it.
Okay.
Elma? Very much the same. I think to remember too that the caregiving is not the only role that you have in your life. You know, like, okay, I was mom's primary caregiver, but I also was a mother to three. I was a wife. I was an individual. Mm-hmm. And when you are in the really heavy duty caregiving, everything else gets put to the back burner. And I still carry a lot of guilt around that, because I do know that as a mom, I dropped the ball because I was so overwhelmed taking care of my own mother. But then when someone has come to me and say, oh, you need to take care of yourself, it's a foreign language. It's not even on the menu. Right. Like if I had a menu, it'd be on like page 18, you know, so someone saying, oh, self-care. No. You know, so if I called a line and I was looking for help and they told me I needed to take care of myself, well, that's not helpful. Mm-hmm. You know, what I could maybe do is, you know, give my maybe more affirmative statements or something like that. But right now, if I would see somebody in the situation that I was in, I don't think I would try to help them in their caregiving role. I would look at the other areas in their life and say, could I get the groceries for you? Mm-hmm. What's the flower bed looking like? I remember one day I looked outside and my girlfriend was weeding my flower bed and I started to cry because I'm like, oh, thank God. I didn't know how much it was bothering me until she was out there doing it for me. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, okay, you know, and she loved gardening. I hated it. And it was a pleasure for her to do. And I'm like, thank you. You know, thank you, Rose. And it's those little moments, you know, where someone looks at, goes, okay, these other things in her life, she really can't deal with right now, but I can. Mm-hmm. And it was a gift. It was genuinely a gift. So, you know, if you're supporting a caregiver, try to look at their whole person and see if there's other areas in their life that you can just maybe come along and give them some support there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think from my perspective, it was a little bit easier because I could leave work. I could go home and have kind of that separation there. But I think the hard part for me came really when my employer did start to feel like family, it didn't feel so much like I had the separation there. Like even when I was at home, I was always thinking of things that like I would pick up on my way into work or that kind of thing. And pretty much any time I was asked to stay late, I would, because it felt like I was needed and I needed to make that decision. And I had people around me sometimes that really struggled with that, because sometimes it meant that I had to cancel plans. And especially if the person that I had made plans with worked that kind of more 9-to-5 job where they would never run into these things where they're working sometimes a long stretch of extra hours, they just didn't understand that. So I think, yeah, when it comes to people that are working as caregivers, trying to understand that even though it's their job, even though they're employed in this role, like I feel like caregivers naturally have a hard time putting those boundaries in place that they maybe should, no matter who they're caring for, and accepting that sometimes, yeah, they're going to still put their work before other things in their lives, even if it's not for a family member. And just, yeah, being gracious when those moments happen. Yeah. So before we go, is there anything else that we haven't covered today that you would like to touch on?
I think it's just really important to value and honor the role of caregivers. I'm going to make the assumption that Layla wasn't paid, neither was I. And you don't assume that you're going to be, because particularly if you're taking care of a family member, right? So sacrifices are being made. There's other family members who are sacrificing, siblings and other children. The caregiver carries a lot, but so do the people around the caregiver. The other family members, we're part of a larger picture. So I think it's try not to break it up too much in just the one role, the one piece, the one, just problem solve the one thing. Always remember it's part of a whole. It's more mm-hmm. organic and larger piece that I might be the designated caregiver, but it affected my children. It affected my husband, but it certainly affected my mother. Mm-hmm. And when she did finally go into long-term care, it was such a relief to be able to step back and become the daughter again, mm-hmm. And say to somebody else, no, I don't like the way you're taking care of her. Or yes, I love the way you're taking care of her. Mm-hmm. But that, caregiving is complex. There's really, really great highs and there's really, really deep lows. And quite often that can be in the same hour, mm-hmm. Which is why you're exhausted, because you're on that roller coaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things I think of is, thanks Elma for reminding us that there are those highs along with the lows. We often talk about the struggles, right? Or that's mm-hmm. where our attention tends to go. And I just, and just wanting to note, with my son, there's a lot of joy in mm-hmm. being his parent. He's so earnest and so dedicated to the things that he's wanting to do. And even lately, as he's thought about COVID, he's thinking about other people and how they're experiencing it. And he does not have friends per se. That's not something that's part of the picture for him. And yet what he started to say out loud was that there might be someone out there who needs me to be their friend mm-hmm. because people are having a hard time during COVID. Mm-hmm. But I'm doing okay, but someone else might need a friend. And so then what he did with that was to start thinking, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give a presentation at my high school when we're back in person, and I'm going to present to people about how important it is to be a good friend. That's amazing.
That's precious.
And he's, he just is constantly full of surprises. And it's really delightful to see his distinctiveness continue to emerge.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. What a great perspective to have, eh? What can I do to help? And that he's planning that already. That's exciting. And that's a proud mom moment, eh? A proud mom.
I'm kind of glowy.
Yeah.
Oh, that is awesome. Well, thank you so much to both of you for joining me today. I really appreciate it. And I hope that we've been able to shed a little bit more light on this very complex topic of caregiving. It doesn't feel like the very few weeks that we are focusing on it is nearly enough to cover even barely beneath the surface, but I really appreciate you both sharing your experiences with us today.
You're welcome.
A pleasure. Thanks, Caitlin.